It's Monday, July 24th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 11 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 49 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, and now the men are back on the mics for their
roar.
First full episode since that travesty of episode 10. Oh. I'm Dan.
Girls are so gross.
They are. I have with me Chad.
Hi.
Adam.
Hi, Chaos.
Yes.
He did it. He did it. It is done.
I remembered.
You, sir, are a twit.
What a knob. I'm John. Hi.
Yeah,
John.
John is the other person here. Yeah, that was a shout-out to Chaos, one of our forum users. If you haven't checked out our forums, they are, of course, on feartheboot.com, so stop by and say hi. And we have actually some emails, folks, to send us. We're going to go over today on the air. And if you guys have not gotten in touch with us in any way, shape, or form, drop us a line. Let us know what you think about the show, what you like, what you don't like, topics you'd like us to cover. And we will go ahead and take those under advisement. And I also want to let you guys know, I've had a couple people ask if there's any place we are going to be in the future. Because if they want to, you guys want to come out and meet us or see us do our thing or whatever.
I don't know why people would want to do that.
I've had several people ask. So
I wouldn't want to meet. Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't want to meet you. I can't believe I even know you.
I regret knowing you, Chad.
So the answer is yes. First of all, we are going to be at Gen Con all day on Saturday, August the 12th. And we're not doing any panels there, but we are going to be participating in a podcasting event called Gen Con Almost Live, where we, along with a handful of other podcasts, say handful, I think it's actually quite a few, but we, along with several other podcasts, are going to be doing a almost constant coverage of the con, and then taking those feeds and putting them up on a specific feed, which I'll give you guys when I have it, and they're calling this Gen Con Almost Live. The second appearance we're going to be making is October 5th through the 8th, which is a Saturday, or rather a Thursday through a Sunday. We are going to be at a convention that's located here in the St. Louis metro area called Archon, which will be in Collinsville, Illinois, and we're still working out the details, but it looks like right now we are going to be doing probably three panels, maybe even four. So two, three, four panels on podcasting. We are also going to be issued press passes, and we're going to be walking around.
So official.
I know. So
we have media legitimacy now.
So we're going to be walking around with a mic doing a feed of the con and a little bit of press coverage. So if you guys want to meet us, there's the two things we have on the calendar right now, maybe more later, but right now that's what we got. Okay. With that being our con schedule, we now need to tell a good con story to cap this off. And John, I would like you to enrich us with your story about being arrested at a con.
Con arrests. They're ugly, but they happen.
My ugly.
No, not so ugly. Not in all respects, but more on that later. Anyway, my first con appearance was at Archon 2002. I was a fresh junior in high school that had never been to one of these things, doe-eyed and innocent, and I showed up not knowing what to expect. I had fun on day one, had a great time, realized that these weekends were probably going to become the highlights of my years from henceforth, which they have. Was just rocking out, looking at dealer tables, playing card games, when suddenly, on the afternoon of day two, a couple of these Klingon chicks showed up with shackles.
Oh, and we just don't mean Klingon chicks, we mean
Klingon.
Full body. The skull thing,
exactly.
The wigs.
They are really crack cool. Klingons. They are not Walmart Klingons. They. So I'm getting bound up, vaguely
two Klingon
sadomasochistic
chicks.
Little ceremony going on at this table I'm at. A certain friend of mine giggling maniacally, thinking this is just the funniest damn thing in the world. They take a picture of me, a Polaroid, because ha ha ha, we can laugh at him later if we have it on film. I happen, at that moment in the picture, to be looking at the lead arrestor's chest, which is both voluminous and very largely exposed on account of the accuracy of her Klingon costume.
You weren't looking. You were devouring
I was
the scene.
Absorbed.
Staring
its
into it.
Gravity wells had my eyes.
And at that moment of John's perfection,
my nubile 16-year-old astoundment.
Somebody clicked the camera.
Somebody clicked the camera.
He has this beautiful grin on his face.
Oh, now, man. Am I correct? Wonderful.
Somebody here has this picture.
Yes.
And is going to post this on our website.
I will post this picture on our website.
And it is my intention to make it my avatar on the forum.
So if you look in our forums, probably in the episodes category, we are going to start a thread that will have this picture in it.
The eating grin.
The poop eating grin.
Poop eating grin.
And the
No, he doesn't have the grin in that picture.
Well, he has a grin.
I have a grin. Scared smile. I'm in control. I'm John G. Hey, baby, how you doing, grin?
It's the Admiral Ackbar. What do I do now?
It's a trap. Our cruisers cannot repel firepower of that magnitude.
So, more than a poop-eating grin, it's kind of a milk-drinking grin.
Exactly.
Thanks for the mammaries.
Want to hit on something else here, just kind of an issue of side business before we dig into the meat of the show, which is our first two episodes, episode 1 and 2.
Great. Gold. 18 minutes of fame.
Here comes the backtrack.
The backtrack goes like this. I've had a couple people contact me and say that they were kind of put off by the tone that we took in the first two episodes, which actually, if you go back and look at the behind-the-scenes posts that we were making after each of the first five episodes, because kind of talking through the process of us developing this podcast, one of the things that we regularly said ourselves was that in those first couple episodes, we were really unusually negative and almost combative for the way we wanted to do this podcast. So if you were telling someone to listen to this podcast for the first time, encourage them to start on a later episode to hear what we're like, then backtrack to the older episodes, because we have matured a lot since then in the way we do this, even in just the short 8 or 9 episodes since then. You know, people, when they come to a podcast, they want to get them in order. So start at episode 1 and work your way up. But honestly, with us, it's not really a good way to hear what we're all about, because we didn't exactly know what we were doing on the mic.
We didn't think anybody would listen to us, and we were just screwing around.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of it, too, was it was criticism without explanation. It was just blatant bashing. Yeah, it was bashing of stuff. And while I don't disagree with any of the points that we made, I do disagree with how we made them.
Yeah, exactly.
And in later episodes, we even came back and explained what we were meaning in a more logical way.
Yeah, we were asked to, and very justifiably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is certainly a show that is strongly editorial, and that's not something that we're going to back away from, but we found a finesse in the way we present that.
Right.
Like you said, explaining what we're doing. So, once again, if you know someone who's interested in listening to Fear the Boot, encourage them to start at a late episode and then... After when they're ready for the complete package and know where we came to, then go back and see where we came from.
We might even put bumpers on the first couple saying, if this is your first time, check out the newer ones or something like that. We don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do that this week if I get a chance. I wanted to do it last week, but I just didn't have time. Now, I got an email from Chris Hussey, and if you are a BattleTech player, that's a name you might recognize. He was an author who got involved with BattleTech a little bit late in the product cycle, did a lot of the periphery stuff. Mm-hmm. And by periphery, I don't mean side. I mean, if you've played BattleTech...
It's a zone. It's a government sort of area within the geography of BattleTech.
Right, yeah. You have the inner sphere, which is the main series of planets things occur in, and then beyond that is the periphery. Mm-hmm. So he did a lot of products for the periphery. And looking around, it looks like he's also got his name on some of the FanPro stuff. Now, I haven't followed BattleTech since FASA went under. So if you follow BattleTech, you probably know his name from somewhere along the line. And he sent me an email, and I don't want to beat this too much, because in episode, I believe, 9, we talked about alignment. It's not just a subject we covered, but the debate on alignment really is widely discussed in the RP community.
Right.
So I don't want to hit this too long for sake of boring you guys with a tried and true conversation. But he wrote something and said, in episode 9, you talk a bit about alignment and judging character actions in a 21st century moral context. This has been a real problem for me in the past, both as a player and as a DM. The player side is a story I'll share at a different time, but on the DM side, I even went as far as to write up a small section on the law of the land that should have given the players guidance as to what to do in a situation, or what to do in a situation I knew they would encounter down the road. Sadly, it did not, and dealing with the player's reaction situation almost derailed my campaign. And the thing that he brought up there I want to talk about is not alignment itself, but something we mentioned in passing in that episode, which is we have a real trouble discerning the intellectual and moral fads from our time with, on one hand, the intellectual and moral fads of another time, and secondly, the broader more consistent overarching themes of morality across human history. For example, I used to play in an online Shadowrun game. It's something like a MUD. It's called a MUSH. It's a little more RP-oriented than a MUD is. In Shadowrun, there's supposed to be a lot of racism between the metahumans, the humans and the elves and the orcs and the trolls. There's a lot of racism between them. Yet on this MUSH, because everyone was a
nice person.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe a genuine human being.
Nice person, mostly college kids in the 90s. Right. And they perfectly reflected that. And there was absolutely no racism on there.
Right.
And anyone who acted racist was instantly, oh, you know, you farm living sheep bleeping so and so. And
I tried to play a racist on there. Like, because on their message boards, they were even talking about, we need more racism. I see Lee in the story. We need more racism. And so I tried to play that out, and the very people who were saying that we need more racism were just aghast that I was playing such a racist, you know, against orcs and against elves and against dwarves, you know, racist kind of player. That, and it was very hard for them to RP against that.
Yeah, and that hits a little bit into another subject I don't want to develop right here, which is dealing with offensive behavior in the context of a game.
Right.
But the point is that, exactly like you're saying, that you were being judged not by the context of the game, but by the context of 20th century thought.
Right.
Another example, this is one I was just kind of rolling around in my head. Let's say that you were playing a role-playing game that is set pre-Civil War, so kind of the early industrial age, in America South. Could you play a lawful good slave owner? Now, of course, sitting here right here
from
right now,
from the perspective of the slave owners, you can.
Yeah, exactly. As you're sitting here right here right now, we would all freak out and say, oh no, if you own slaves, you're an evil person, this, that, and the other. But could you play someone who abides by the law, is a compassionate man, even towards the slaves, you know, has a sense of decency and heart and love and all these things, but just happens to own slaves? And of course, today we'd say no. I mean, this is still an evil act, but in the context of that historical moment in history, you certainly could play a lawful good person who is also a slave owner.
Well, the discussion is, do you take a relativistic view of morality across lines of culture and time, or do you lay down a hard code that you apply to everything? And I would probably put myself in the latter camp.
You know, I would too, but I guess,
I think for ease of play that you would have to lay down the hard code.
Yeah, and I guess, of course, the question is, in, you know, I don't know about within context of role-playing games. Personally, out of the role-playing game, I'm definitely not a moral relativist. I'm a moral absolutist. But within the role-playing game, I don't know. Maybe I am a little bit more of a moral relativist within the game. Yeah. So that I do judge things by the context of what's going on in the game. So I don't know. It's one I'm going to have to think about. Okay. As I said, I don't want to beat that to death, so we'll go ahead and move on from that. Our next email I want to read is from Mick over at the Harping Monkey, which is another podcast. They actually do two podcasts, right?
Yeah.
They do Misfit Brew and Roundtable. And Mick wrote in and asked us this. He said, you guys have on several occasions associated the terms LARP or LARPer or LARPing with very negative connotations. I've never LARPed, but still, it makes me wonder why the one thing you all seem to agree on is that LARPing is that LARPing is either silly or just way too over the top for any sane person to participate in. And also, a few times you've suggested that sometimes people who actually try to portray their characters or use props or bits of costume or whatever in a tabletop session are too much like LARPers. I'm not rankled by this, but I am curious. Could you guys take some time to clarify and elaborate on what you don't like about that particular style of play? Not just actual LARPing, but the immersive actor stance thing in tabletop RP that you have negatively equated with LARPing. Why is it so worthy of poking fun at? Now, I wrote Mick back an email, but because this is something that we have kind of hinted at several times in the podcast, I thought it'd be good if we went ahead and on air, so to speak, developed our views on LARPing.
Can I go first?
Well, yes. All right, I'll let you go first, but before we do that, I want to separate this into two issues, because Mick brought up two different issues here. Issue number one is RPing around a tabletop RPG, not LARPing.
What we did.
Right. RPing around a tabletop RPG where you use things that have sort of a LARP-ish feel to them, like you grab a prop or a bit of costume, or you stand up and act out a moment of RP. The second issue is LARPing itself, actually dressing up like a vampire and getting ejected from Denny's. So let's start with issue number one first, which is using bits of LARP-ish things around a tabletop RPG. Adam, you want to speak first, so...
Now, here comes a confusing bit of this.
Okay.
When I was in high school, I did a lot of drama.
Okay.
I did it all 4 years.
Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah. Plays, musicals. I loved it.
Uh-huh.
When we role play around the table, I hate being in character. And everybody in this room has gamed with me and knows that getting me to do things in character is like pulling teeth.
Okay. LARPing, but when you do it, you sound good.
LARPing's the next level.
All right, but hold on. Before we develop...
It's just weird.
I'm going to ask you to explain this here in a little bit. But before we do, let's go ahead and create camps and factions and hatred between us. All right. I personally, I like RP around the table. And I have absolutely no problem with using props, bits of costume, things like that to illustrate the RP. I love it. I personally do it. I wouldn't say all the time, but it's not infrequent that I do it.
Right.
Chad, where do you fall on this?
I don't mind doing the props and the standing up and the physical emotes and stuff around a tabletop. I don't really have a problem with LARPing, although it's not something that I would want to do myself.
All right, let's hold off on LARPing for a sec.
Just the tabletop?
Tabletop props. You're cool with it.
Yeah, I do it all the time. Okay. I'm fine with it. I try and get, when I run games, I try and get these guys to do it even more.
Okay, John, what about you?
I'm fine with the tabletop in-character speech and action emoting and stuff. I do it all the time. When I'm DMing, I don't think I've ever bothered to use props, but not because I'm against them on any level, but I just haven't thought to do it or found a situation which would greatly enhance the game.
Okay, so we have three that are okay with it and one who's against.
Yeah.
All right, so Adam, since you're on the defensive here, we'll let you go first. Can you explain what really is your issue with it?
I have no idea.
Really?
It stems from my disdain for role-playing in character, and then just transfers over to LARPing, which is the next level of that.
It's the next tier of the awkward weirdness that you think is not quite normal, but you can't quantify it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Okay. You think you just quantified it.
Okay, very good.
But it's a role-playing game.
It is a role-playing game.
Where you role-play a character... But you hate role-playing a character.
You're right.
But you love role-playing.
Well, you're right, I do.
All right. You know, my take on him playing junior psychoanalyst is this.
Here we go. I'm laying down on your couch.
All right. Most people see playing make-believe as a very childish thing. Mm. That when you're kids, you play guns or play house or whatever it is. And as you get older, you put that behind you and you focus on very material, real world, tangible things.
Yeah. My mom wishes I'd get to that point.
I know. Whereas we as role players, we add a huge new layer of complexity and innovation to it, but we're still fundamentally just sitting around playing make believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to bag on it at all. Cause I mean, I think this, I love role playing. It's just, this is what it is. And I've got to wonder if Adam, you not having a background, you didn't continuously do this. It's really not much time between the point in history that I was playing make-believe as a child and playing more formalized role-playing games. There's some years of gap there, but not that many. But in your case, you departed that moment of childhood and, correct me if I'm wrong, but went through most of your adolescent and early adult life not doing this.
Yeah.
So now suddenly you're coming back to it and you're sitting around with a bunch of grown men playing make-believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fair assumption. I'm not going to leap to that as being the reason, but...
Well, in my junior psychoanalyst hat, I got to think that figures in there.
Yeah.
And I would bet this is going to pass. I would bet you that a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, if we keep good, consistent hierarchy games going, he will get over that.
Yeah. Well, I've seen him.
I don't know. We're moving into year seven.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I've seen you progress from hardly any RP, wouldn't name your character... What does your character look like? He looks like me. Well, what's he wearing? It doesn't matter. Well, what's his name? What's my name? Well, what do? I tell the person what you just told me, you know, and that sort of thing. And you don't do that. Well, it is. But you don't do that anymore. You more role play out. I've seen you get the facial expressions, and when you get into it, you get the look, and you get the voice, and you start motioning with your hand. We're getting you. We're getting you.
It's a conditioned thing. It's not because I'm actually role-playing. It's just because I don't want to hear you complain about it later.
Works for me.
No, okay.
All right, let's move from this to actual real LARPing.
We're talking costumes, running around in a park.
Yeah, and maybe even a step back from that. Because I would include in LARPing, I mean, if you stand up and you consistently act out all the scenes, you are your character down to your slightest nuance, the way you wave your hands, the way your character waves his hands, 100% of the time. You
know, it's the fine line between improv theater and gaming.
Right, yeah. You maybe are at the point of improv theater, except...
You roll a dice audience, every 20 minutes.
Less audience, and maybe you roll dice or play paper, scissors, rocks to resolve questions of capacity.
Right.
But true LARPing here, let's build the camps and then let's defend the positions. Adam, I'll let you go first. Deadly against LARPing.
Yes.
Okay, we'll come back to why in a second. Chad,
we have made several role-playing games
right.
in our past, and the favorite one that I love to play
right.
is a LARP. I mean, there's no question about it. It's a LARP, and I love it. And we've somewhat LARPed it, and yeah, I don't have a problem with LARPing. I have a problem with LARPing in Denny's. I have a problem with LARPing in a bar at a bowling alley.
All right, so your answer is yes, with reservations.
Yes.
Okay, I'm exactly the same as Chad. In fact, some of the things he started saying there, I agree with. We'll develop that in a moment. Mm-hmm. As for LARPing, I poke a lot of fun at it because it's an easy target to poke fun at, but I do not have anything against LARPs or LARPers in general, provided there's some good... So, yes, with reservations. Draw some good boundaries.
I got a problem with the LARPers who get ejected from Denny.
Well, all right, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
So anybody who gets ejected from Denny's has a problem with me.
All right, so the basic position...
I've been ejected from a Denny's.
Well, then we got issues, buddy.
All right, so the basic position with three of us so far is Adam says no. Chad's a yes with reservations. Mm-hmm. I'm a yes with reservations. John
is a no with qualifications. My Whoa. Experience with LARPing has been very limited, but negative.
Okay, so no, but you'd be willing to be shown a different light.
I'll give it another chance, but I've seen a little bit, and it looks pretty gross.
All right, so we're going to put you in the no camp, just so Adam's not
I'm in the no camp. Don't worry
so
about
Adam's
that.
Just so Adam's not fending for himself. All right, Adam, John, what is it you guys don't like about LARPing?
All right, I'll take this one first, Adam.
Excellent.
The LARPs I've seen are almost purely masturbatory in intent and nature. I see them basically at Archon, and it's the Vampire the Masquerade people.
Those Archon LARPs
is
are...
evidently the LARP, and maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Again, this is teeny tiny, limited, short perspective.
Right.
I see them stand around for hours on end trying to look like they're hard and badass.
Yeah.
And really wanting people to acknowledge that.
The thing about the Archon LARP, and I'm not arguing against your point, I'm just clarifying on the Archon LARP. The Archon LARP is not role-playing, from what I've seen. Now, maybe they go off into their hotel rooms and role-play where nobody ever sees it, but it is a combat game, the way they do it.
I would
it's
agree with
the
that.
Hotel, people are dressed up, and they have their different powers, and it's a game of team tag, and they stalk each other through the hotel. When they find each other, they throw down, they roll,
right.
and then they move on. There's
and
no role-play.
You
role-play
as in if you're a werewolf, you growl a lot, and if you're a vampire,
right.
you
yeah.
stand in a
yeah.
corner and look sexy. And that's
I think
the norm.
There's a contempt of the very near but not quite exactly aligned with hobbies, like you'll see in a lot of places. They're kind of doing the same thing the tabletoppers are, but
mm-hmm.
with a different spin. And that breeds hatred.
All right, let me throw something in here and kind of turn this back into a question. At least personally, and I think this is true of a lot of people, that when you say LARP, the image in your mind is World of Darkness. Whether
yeah.
you intend to or
yeah.
not, when you say LARP...
Or Call of Cthulhu, but yeah, mostly World
yeah,
Darkness.
Mostly World of Darkness. Vampire, werewolf, maybe to a lesser degree mage, but it's always some World of Darkness game. But you could, I mean, conceivably,
yeah.
LARP any game.
Yeah.
So, John, have you ever seen or participated in a LARP that was not World of Darkness? Because I agree with you, World of Darkness lends itself very much to a self-image game. So let's say, have you ever seen a D&D LARP?
I have not. The only LARP I've seen is at Archon and World of Darkness. Hey guys, I'm a vampire. I'm really complex, and you don't understand the music I listen to.
Well, that's a positive. The best LARPs are the LARPs you can't see.
That's yeah. good, too.
All right, so Adam and John, after listening to what you said, I definitely hear walking away a no, but it sounds like your experience with it has been negative but limited. So
yes.
Someday maybe we'll show you a better light to it, maybe after you come back from Rome.
Maybe.
Adam, what is your beef with LARP?
I don't have a specific beef, but I think it's just random, generic, role-playing disdain for...
Is it a lack of structure?
No,
Well, self-consciousness.
You know what? There might be a lack of structure. I don't yeah. have that much experience.
The
with
same
myself.
Symptom of the underlying cause of your disdain for around the table in character LARP.
That's
it. Just wigs you out.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's about the same thing.
I guess my problem with it is the public aspect of it. I don't have a problem with LARPing. I have a problem with LARPing in public. I have a problem with gaming in public.
Well, LARPing in public, you're not LARP. You're not playing the game for yourself.
Yeah.
When you LARP in public, you're playing the game so people notice you.
Yeah, it's
you're
an
performing
audience.
For an audience. Oh, yeah. You're not gaming.
Which,
right.
You're performing.
Chad, you and I came down on the yes with reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree with you. Reservation number one is I am not the type of person that just spends my life worrying endlessly about what everybody thinks of me. I've got to be myself. The fact of the matter is we live in a world that has a social structure, and the image people have of you does absolutely affect how you fit into that structure. And a lot of LARPers I've seen have no boundaries whatsoever.
Yeah.
The things they do to each other and the places they do them, i.e. public places, is just baffling to me. And I don't think all LARPers are like this. I'm shooting at an easy stereotype here.
Right.
I don't think it's true of all LARPers. But the majority of them I've seen just don't seem to have very good boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue I have with LARPing, if I was to, someone on our forum put up this types of role players thing, where you're supposed to generally put yourself into one of a couple personality types of role player, and there was a simulationist who was really all about the game math and the mechanics, mm-hmm. things like that, a storyteller who's primarily about the story. I would consider myself to be a 60-40 storyteller simulationist. And to me, the consistency and the depth of the simulation is important. I am playing my character, but I am not my character. And one of the problems I have with LARPing is in LARPing, you are your character. That if you walk up to another person in the LARP and you accidentally stutter or slur your speech, or you try to convince them of something but come off like an idiot, that's taken as canon. That's what actually happened. But to me, that's a point where I would rather stop, shoot some dice, and say, okay, you sounded like a stuttering idiot, but your character was extremely suave when he said that and very convincing.
Yeah.
And the person you were talking to did not believe you, Dan, but his character did believe your character.
Mm-hmm.
And so it rolls with that. And
in a LARP, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't stop and shoot the dice, see if you're suave, because it breaks up the feel, it breaks up the flow of the acting and that sort of thing. And
right.
It takes people out of the reality.
And I'm sure someone's going to rise and say, you know what, we do that. That when I role play a diplomacy with somebody else, we do stop and shoot dice. And I recognize...
I think that would probably be more the exception to the...
Yeah, I agree. The LARPers I've dealt with don't typically do that. If you have to stop, do anything, the ones I've dealt with see that as a problem in the game.
Right.
So the other problem I have, in addition to lack of boundaries, is I really want to keep a distinction between me and my character that LARPing doesn't really preserve. Now, having said that, like you said, Chad, we've got games that are best done LARPing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any real problem with it. It's just easy to make fun of.
Right.
All right. Now, last night, we just switched campaigns. If you follow this podcast, you know that for a while, for this group of people, Chad has been running a Battletech game for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And as of last night, I have never GM'd with this group of people before. In fact, the people that I have been consistently playing with for years and years and years, with the exception of Chad, is not the people behind these mics.
Yeah, and even then, we stopped gaming together for 5 years?
5-6 years.
Yeah.
So we kind of lost touch with each other's current flow and mojo of gaming.
Yeah.
So, Adam's correcting us saying it was 7 years.
Oh, yes.
7 years. Well, whatever.
I believe his math. I'll work it out later, but I believe his math. But anyway, so last night, I took over GMing. And we sat down to have a first game. And Adam described this as a trifecta.
It was the trifecta.
All right, what is the trifecta for disaster?
Well, we had a new DM.
Right.
We've never gamed with before.
Uh-huh.
We had a new player.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first game of the campaign.
Yep.
It was the trifecta of new things that are the destroyer of games.
Yeah.
I might even make it the superfecta, egocentric as I am, of the absence of a regular.
Since
I was gone.
Yeah. Well, basically it got down to the entire group dynamic in the course of 1 week completely changed, and we started a totally new game.
Right. With John being gone, kind of how that busted things up was the way we had designed the group template. Every character kind of knew each other via the nexus of him.
Right.
Which was not, in retrospect, a very smart idea.
No.
Because
it was a great idea at the time.
You know, all roads lead to John.
But, and John leads to Rome.
John leads to Rome. Ergo, Socrates is mortal.
But John had to drop out of the game, and as a result, kind of smash up the group. But I don't want to talk about that. What I do want to talk about is, as long as I have been role-playing with any depth and any seriousness at all, the hardest single game of every campaign, the destroyer of worlds that I feel good if it just goes mediocre, is the first game.
Yep. They're awful.
And let's talk about why they're awful, and let's talk about some of the things you can do to mitigate their awfulitude.
Awfulitude.
That is a real word that I just made up.
I'm going to beep that when I edit this thing. I'm going to flatten that line. That is disgusting.
I think that the game usually gets screwed up because we had the trifecta going, but usually you have the two-pronged attack. Well, it's usually a new DM. You switch. You usually switch DMs in the game, and then it's a new campaign. So you've already got two-thirds of the trifecta going.
Let's define why those are problems. Sorry, Chad, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I disagree. I think that the number one thing that kills games before those other things will kill a game or make a campaign really difficult to start is it's the introductory campaign. Nobody knows each other. Everybody's a stranger. Something happens. And then it's like you either play it ICly and you spend the entire game, well, why should I trust this person? Why should I work with this person?
Let me spin it this way. Because we talked about way back when in podcasting history, like a couple weeks ago, about a group template and how a group template should make your first games easier.
Yes.
And in this case, it was complicated by the fact that our group template got broken like days before the first game started.
We completely flushed it.
But a lot of times, paper and reality don't line up.
Mm-hmm.
That you write on paper things where your game master assumes you'll be motivated by something in particular, or assumes you'll handle situation, not in some specific way, but at least kind of in this category that certainly they'll talk to some amount to this guy, or if not this guy, then that guy, or whatever. And based on the background templates, maybe it makes good sense. Maybe it isn't written there, but it's easy to assume just based on other things that were said, and so on and so forth. And you actually get into the game and it doesn't work out.
Right.
You know, we had worked out this group template, so theoretically you guys should have been a pretty stable party from the get-go.
Yeah. Well, the original group template, you know, all the characters were connected. There was history behind them. They were all friends. And then if something bad happens, we'll use our classic thing, the king calls us in to go kill a dragon, none of us would have any problem whatsoever going off to kill the dragon together. But when that changed, we'll just assume that the group didn't use a group template. Well, we didn't. With the new group,
right?
When the way things changed, we didn't use a group template. The thing happened with the king called us in to kill the dragon, which is not really what happened. We didn't want to go together. Who are you? It's like it got to the point to where one person had to say, okay, I'm going to gather up some people. You and you, random person, come with me. And it was just very awkward.
There's also a problem in first games I've seen repeatedly of the simple human dynamic of 1 plus 1 equals upside down pineapple. Where you
giant
take,
squid.
Yeah, or 1 plus 1 equals the square root of negative 1. You take a group of people where individually you know what motivates the players and you know what motivates the characters. But you put them together and something happens you did not expect.
Right.
For example, in the game last night, Dawn's character and Melina's character, just because of a chance running, hated each other.
Yeah. They didn't write this in. This wasn't part of their, it wasn't part of their original characters. It's just that, something, an event, by chance, happened between them to cause each other to hate them.
Well, neither of them, as role players, have any problem causing their characters to hate to the point of mortality other player characters. So
well, none
that
of us
could
do.
Be a player thing.
I think social uncertainty is another one.
Yeah.
You know what's strange is when I GM, I've been GMing since like 1988, so I mean, 16 years now?
Mm-hmm.
No.
18
years. Help me on my math. 18 years now. For some reason, once a game is in flow, I sit down and I feel really confident as a GM because I know what to expect. There's kind of a flow going, I just have to start that flow up again for today's sitting.
Right.
But when I start a campaign, I feel so much uncertainty. I am like hyper-analyzing everyone's responses to things I do to feel out, okay, did he like that? Did he not like that? What are these characters going to be interested in? There's just so much even putting aside uncertainties about plot and uncertainties about group dynamics.
Yeah.
I feel sort of social uncertainty.
Well, I think that when you have new players introduced into the campaign, the players feel that too. Like, does this person do a certain high level of role playing? Is this person going to leap up in the middle of the game and whip out his cloak and his fake sword and start going crazy? Is if I leap up in the middle of the game like I've been doing for the past 20 years with my cloak and my sword, is this person who's new going to think that I'm a complete nut?
Right.
You know, and
the answer
so,
is yes.
So, well, the answer so both people, the new guy and the old guy, don't do anything. They just kind of look across the table at each other, waiting for the first move to kind of get that social thing going.
Yeah, and even beyond that, I think that everyone there, but especially the DM, has a certain performance anxiety. I mean, if the guy gives a crap about the quality of the game he runs, which a good DM should,
right?
he'll be nervous. He'll be looking at everything, and as you said, Dan, overanalyzing, and
yeah, I didn't use that phrase, but performance anxiety is exactly what I would call it. Let's offer some advice here on how to fix this.
And group template.
Well, group template's a good one. We did a boo-boo in that we didn't fix the group template.
Yeah, we just assumed that it would roll on.
John left, and we just pushed ahead.
Yeah, you had some jerk player that bugged out at the last minute because he knew he was going to be in for three sessions.
Another piece of advice I have, and this is very pragmatic, but this is honestly, in my mind at least, awful advice, is bulldoze through it and get it done.
Yeah, that's how I usually do it. It's like that, you know, the first game is going to be awesome, the players know it's going to be awful, push through.
Right. Imagine you're sitting in a parked car in an alleyway with nowhere to go, and you see a great big F-350 barreling down on you, the driver is dead at the wheel, this is going to hit you. What you have to deal with now is mitigating the damage. You put on your seat belt. You make sure you're well aligned with the airbag. You know, things like that. You put down the scalding hot coffee. And that's the way I see a first game. There are so many factors you cannot predict. How the players are going to get along. How the characters are going to get along. Screw-ups you're going to make. Things you thought they'd go after, they won't go after. That you really cannot necessarily avert this disaster.
Right.
All you can do is mitigate it.
Yes.
Way one to mitigate is, we've said a couple times, I'm not going to develop this as the group template.
Yeah.
I think way number two is to isolate that part of the plot. Now, with the D&D game we're running right now, I have in mind this huge overarching campaign about things going on in the world. Mm. Okay. This first game, however, while it hints at or foreshadows some of those events, is not directly tied into those events, does not feature too many of the major NPCs of those events. You can have a game that's just an unmitigated train wreck, and it is not going to destroy my campaign as a whole. So that's the second thing beyond the group template I would offer. Something else I want to talk about, kind of related to this, but much worse.
Worse?
Worse. Worse than the first game. Worse than a first game.
It's a first LARP game.
Oh, no.
You're disgusting.
No. Worse than a first LARP game. Worse than Chad having a first LARP game of Shadowrun.
Oh, my God.
You know I was going to wait for like two more of those to bounce back and bring up Shadowrun. Damn,
I can't even imagine what you'd do in that game besides just hug yourself in a corner and cry.
I can't even imagine where we're going. It's going to be worse than all
No, Dan, please end our world with the most terrible event of gaming ever.
Game killers.
Oh,
the things that completely destroy your game. And the first one, I was actually going to toss this out there as the answer to your question, John, but I wanted to put this within a category. The first and most terrible of them is the month of December.
Ooh. The game killing month.
Yes, this is the event horizon beyond which no matter exists.
If not even Sam Neill the demon.
If your game, if you have a campaign that's ongoing and it bridges the month of December, you know you have a good solid crew and a good solid game.
Well,
you're still worried.
Yeah, be worried because December is coming again. Yeah. So
either you guys have absolutely no family and no social anchor whatsoever, or you have the most dedicated gamers on the face of the earth. December, just because of the sheer number of family affairs, church affairs, work affairs, all the crap that's going on, I have seen so many games that are these great, big, mighty ships that sail into the Bermuda Triangle of December and are never seen again.
We had them.
We've had so many games that we were so excited about starting up in October, and then by mid-December, they were just...
Oh, October. That's a baby. We ran a Battletech game from March to December that was going great. Hit the rocks. January was gone.
Yep. What do you guys want to play now?
The only thing I can think to do to get past December is if you can find a good way to package up your game and save it for later. But you know what?
Lose the feel.
I lose the feel. I lose the flow. And usually something else grabs my fancy. It's like, man, I'd rather do this anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that happens to us.
You know what? There's another game killer right there. You've got a campaign going on. You're 4 or 5 games into it. Say you're playing Shadowrun D&D.
Whim of the moment.
Yeah. Say you're playing
something
Shadowrun.
Something shiny.
Yeah. And then, not even during the game, you're out with your friends grabbing a hamburger, and you start talking about D&D. You start talking about paranoia.
Yes,
wouldn't it be cool? Remember when we played paranoia? And then you start talking and talking and talking, and suddenly you don't want to play your first game anymore.
Or you have a new primarily DM person in your gaming group, and you're on game number 3 or 4 with your old mainstay, and everybody thinks, oh, well, what are this new GM's games like? Maybe we should run one. Let's scrap this one.
Yeah.
You know, actually, that within my other gaming group is a forbidden topic.
What's that?
That if we were playing a game, we do not talk about other games for that reason.
I totally see it as justified.
Yeah.
If Carla was
we
here...
We should have done that in our group.
Carla's gone right now, but if she was here, I'd make her get on the mics just to tell you, because we used to game here all the time at our place, and so she heard and saw a lot of our games. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have her tell you just how many games we started, played for maybe 2 weeks, and then stopped because something else grabbed our fancy. I mean, we went through probably a year or two straight of doing that just because of the shiny of the moment.
So we banned it.
We do not talk about it. If you talk about another game.
That's something we should have done. Because we've had a lot of games killed by that.
Oh, yeah.
So. Ever had a game killed by a problem player? A single person, one guy at the table destroy the game?
Yeah, but we tolerate him.
Yeah. I've had games killed by disputes in which I view myself as utterly and entirely in the correct and blame it on that other problem player.
Give me some examples. What are some problem player situations you've had kill games?
Player versus player.
Yeah.
Leading to death of another player's beloved character.
I've seen that happen a couple times.
Fissure, split, I don't care, that was gay, I'm not rolling a new character. Bye. Right.
I have seen that happen. I have a simple way to fix that one, too, which is we just don't allow infighting.
We're going to have some problems.
We're far too abrasive in our roleplay and honest to our own characters, I dare say, to disallow infighting.
Yeah, and that's the main reason. Well, there's two reasons I allow in-party bickering. You know, you don't have to all be best friends, hold hands, and skip around the town. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a level of violence, I usually don't allow it for two reasons. One, it kills the game.
It does.
Pragmatic.
Yeah.
It's a purely pragmatic concern. As fun as it may be or whatever, it kills the game. Yeah. Second reason, and I've seen this happen several times, and no, this does not tie into our conversation episode 9 about violence around the table, but I have seen too many times that kind of strife spill out into the table. The dispute ceases to purely be IC.
Yeah.
And the two people, not the characters, the players, get angry at each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know...
That's when it has to stop. When the PCs, when the characters are angry at each other, that's fine, that's fun, that's role-playing. When the players are angry at each other, that's when it needs to stop.
You have to have an utter and complete divorce from your character, and so too does everyone who is even slightly involved in the conflict. And if you can't manage that, you're right, Dan. It should be utterly outlawed. So, yeah, I think the solution is to write it up beforehand, like you've been suggesting, Dan, and like we've talked about with these character templates. We can be true to our characters and not kill each other if we set the dominoes to begin with that our characters wouldn't kill each other. In games past, we haven't taken that step. We have taken our roleplay to its characters' conclusions, and we've killed games.
Yeah.
This one's
but we've had fun doing it.
Sometimes we have.
Fails miserably,
Here's one that's really common. Plot's gone horribly awry.
I've been in games where the game master has this... I've been in. Okay. Stop being diplomatic about this. Where the plot is so complex and so... It's like this multi-layered onion of intrigue and drama. I have no clue what's going on. Because too much information has hit the party, and we're just like in a daze of plot.
Right. And that's one of the things I've developed a lot better over the past 6 years. But yeah, I've seen that happen. I've had that happen to me. More commonly, I've just seen just players go directions that are so radically overboard, you never saw it coming.
Right.
For example, I play in a Battletech game with Mike and Tim and all them. They wanted to run a mercenary outfit. And as they're playing this mercenary outfit, I gave them a little bit of starting cash. Of course, they earn some money along the way. If you look at the amount of money it takes to repair a mech, I mean, millions and millions of C-bills. Mm-hmm. And so if you're talking about other kinds of commodities, like hiring troops and such, like foot troops, it's relatively cheap. And so I had all these plots going on outside of their mechs, all this intrigue and all this other stuff where they should be going around seeing things and doing things. They just took their huge amounts of cash and hired somebody else to do it. I was like, well... And I couldn't argue with this. Their logic was, we're mech warriors. Why would we go do this? We'll hire special forces to go do it. And I can't argue with that logic. But there's now nothing going on in the world anymore.
Yeah, well, it's a rift between what you're running as a game and what they're looking for. They're looking to hop in the Atlas and blow some buildings up. And you're looking for intrigue.
Outsiders. Family members, friends, significant others.
Drifters.
Yeah.
hobos.
Well, I mean, remember high school, too. You're 16 years old. You don't have your own apartment. You play in your parents' place. So you have your parents there. And I don't know. We never had any hovering parents when we were kids.
No, we didn't. We really didn't. We got yelled at a lot to keep it down.
Yeah.
But that was really, I mean, we're kids. We're loud. That had nothing to do with role-playing.
When we came to my place, though, my dad would come down and heckle us.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't leave.
Yeah, his dad and his brothers would come down and
Dawn's
make fun of us.
Dawn's mom used to do that.
Yeah,
she used to always come and sit down and start talking to us about whatever. And it's like, yeah. You know.
No, he wouldn't come down and talk to us. He'd go, man, you guys are dorks.
Yeah, didn't Ben
this
and Mike call it gay night?
It was gay night.
Yep.
They still do.
What about people bringing along the unwilling significant other?
And like force them to game.
Who's
with
not
us?
Even in the game? It's just like, I'm madly in love with Betty, so I'm going to bring Betty to the game because I don't want to ever be away from her. But Betty hates role playing games.
So he needs to pick Betty for this 4 hours or his attendance in the gaming group.
Let me put to you this way: I can't game when there's somebody doing counted cross stitch in the room, and I'll leave it at that.
It doesn't bother me if someone I know. I can't game around strangers. Like, if we were at your place gaming and Dawn didn't want to play in the game,
right.
I would have no problem playing in front of Dawn. Like, when Dawn's mom used to come in and just sit down.
Don't look at me!
Yeah, exactly. Now that we are older, obviously we don't have parents dropping by or whatever, but what kind of other outside people can still disrupt a game?
Pets.
No, pets
just don't like animals.
Pets are far worse to a podcast than they are a game.
Yeah, they can disrupt a game. I've seen it happen. They can be very conducive to it. My Star Wars game has a cat mascot. I love that little guy. Active dogs can get in the way. No offense, Dan. I love yours.
I guess an easy one would be to point out would be kids. Really, we used to game with a guy who had 3 kids, and it wasn't a problem. I used to game with the little girl sitting on my lap because she would want to be involved. Well, not even really involved. She just wanted to listen to our stories.
Honestly, my view on kids with gaming, because I have gamed with a lot of people that have kids. Mm-hmm. And I know some people forget, like, oh, if you have kids here or a wife here, we can't game here. And yeah. I think that's unrealistic and unfair to the person who's trying to, you know, be so psycho as to start a family.
Yeah. But
my view on kids and gaming is the same view as my kids on anything else. If the kids are well-disciplined, well-behaved kids, they don't interrupt a game any more than they interrupt anything else.
Yeah.
But I've also gamed and done other things with people with kids that are complete hellions, and I can't game because the same reason I couldn't enjoy a movie or enjoy a night out eating with them.
Oh, remember when we had the console LAN and somebody brought their baby and they just had to press the shiny power buttons on each of the consoles every 10 minutes.
And we could not have a console LAN because this kid was here. You know, I don't hold it against people that have kids or non-gaming spouses or whatever, but I mean, kids just... As long as they're disciplined.
I don't know. I think kids bring to the table the same thing that another player brings to the table. You start, as you add people, the level of focus goes down.
Yeah.
Whether they're playing or not.
I could buy that.
I agree with that, but it's something I've always been able to work around.
Yeah.
That when I've gamed with people that have well-behaved kids, you're right. They're kids.
I wouldn't call it a game killer. But
yeah.
Oh, it's not a game killer.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
I think an imaginative and focused kid doesn't bring anything worse to the table than... Any
Even
other
a quiet,
random
focused
guy.
Kid is going to say, Daddy, I'm hungry at some point in the 4 hours. It's inevitably going to happen.
Right. But
and then Daddy has to get up, and then he's gone for 15 minutes.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But you can work around that. Wow. I've never seen that kill a game.
Cell phones. Another disruption.
I've never seen it kill a game, but I've seen cell phones cause a lot of problems.
I've seen it kill sessions.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I have, too.
Especially if they're just ringing constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we used to take, I think we mentioned this in a previous podcast, we used to take our woman breaks, where cell phones were off until a certain moment in the game, and every couple hours we'd stop, and then everyone call your family, call your wives, call your work, call time
you're
and temperature.
Still alive.
Yeah, do whatever it is you got
to
do.
That's why I love my wife. All I would have to do is look over to my right and say, hey, baby, and then it'd be cool, because she's there gaming with us.
I can argue with that. Alright, well, I think that's about it for Game Killer, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will catch you next time for episode 12.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.